It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Leo's away this week, but Andy and Alex are here, and we're talking about the new iPhone 7. Yes, they're out. Also, macOS 10. It's not even macOS 10 anymore. It's just macOS Sierra ships today, and we've had some time to try it out. What did we think? You'll find out right now on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 525, recorded September 20, 2016. Unleash sticker fury.
Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/twit. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Plus, with the developer platform, you can customize the code behind any Squarespace design. Enter the offer code MacBreak and get 10% off. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak.
It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Leo Laporte is on special secret assignment. We're not quite sure what it is, but we know it's going to be pretty fantastic. So joining me this week, we have literally the A-team. We have Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times. How are you, Andy?
Hello. I are fine.
We also have, I think, sitting at the top of a mountain or a very large beach, we have Alex Lindsay. How are you, Alex?
Hey, everybody. I'm top of a building in San Francisco. I was going to show you a production, and then it turned out the production's still in kind of the heavy moving part of the truss, and it was not a great place for a show. So maybe later we'll give you guys a little tour.
Is that true, or did someone start lighting up a lightsaber and you quickly had to move the cameras the other side?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, hey, put that down. We can't show anybody that. That's secret.
They're not supposed to think they're real.
Yeah, exactly. Don't cut the threads of that.
Not utilitarian lightsaber. So I guess the big news is that Apple has shipped the new iPhones. These are two of them, a glossy, actually I'll do the backs first, a matte black iPhone and a glossy iPhone among them. And holding these is difficult. New cameras, new waterproofing. I got to play with them for a while in New York City and drop them into water and take lots of night photographs. I'm actually curious to see what Andy does with them when he goes shooting, though, because Serenity and I walked the Brooklyn Bridge with Michael Fisher at 1 a.m., 2 a.m., and we were taking photos and were shocked that it showed so much more than our eye could see. And I know you've got tons of fancy cameras and probably fancy camera phones that does that. But for me, it was like the first time since the DSLR with a Fast 50 that I've been really impressed by a lens giving me more than I thought. So I think I was more impressed with the camera than I thought I'd be, Andy.
Yeah, and that's really the strength of pretty much any new iPhone camera. There are already a few few blogs are saying, oh, well, the iPhone 7 camera is really good, but unfortunately, our tests show that the Samsung Galaxy 7 is much sharper. It's much better, unfortunately. But the thing is, at this stage, it's really hard to spend more than $350 on a phone camera and not get a good camera that takes good pictures. The difference really now that people are going to see is I'm in a bar at night. The light is crappy. Can it give me a usable picture? Or I'm trying to track fast movement. Will it get focus and lock focus? Now we're at the stage where everybody has that list of pictures that they know that their phone cannot handle. Where why would I even bother taking my phone out? I know it's not going to take a good picture. But now, just as you walking over that bridge, I wouldn't have thought it could take a good picture. Wow, it took a good picture. So that's what we're going to be seeing, hopefully. And yeah, I mean, I hope to have it this week. And I've already just basically plotted out, like, with sort of like a yellow X on my calendar, that if I get it by this date, there is no way in hell I'm going to be in the office on this day, because I'm going to be here, 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 and here. It's going to be fun. It's the most I've been more excited about this phone upgrade than I have been about any phone upgrade in the last 3 or 4 years. That includes all the iPhone stuff.
Senator Caldwell is doing a huge camera shootout for us, and she started posting a few of the sample pictures yesterday. And one of them got, I think, 6,000 retweets. And most of them were, why didn't I have this camera for this Justin Bieber or Beyonce concert last week? Curse you, Apple. I know I want this camera now. Yeah. And mostly, Alex, it was because of the telephoto lens, that ability just to hit a button and have a really clear shot twice as big as it was previously.
Well, I think that's one of the problems you always have, whether it's the portrait view, which I haven't seen the examples of the portrait view yet, but hopefully, I mean, I've seen the ones that Apple showed. The problem with what Apple showed was that you'll notice that there wasn't any flurry hair and things that stick out. I played a lot with the HTC version of that a couple years ago, and where you fall, where you have issues are little strands of things, not so much someone wearing a cap. So it'll be interesting to see how that looks and how it fares. Your phone has been good for, I can take landscapes and I can take very specific selfies or in that range. And so the idea that you can actually, you know, zoom in on something and get something, I think is a pretty exciting, change. And I think that Apple doesn't have to knock it, you know, they don't have to recreate the camera phone as much as they have to constantly be upgrading it, constantly making it better, constantly looking for the low light. I think the low light is probably the most important thing. So all that detail that you're talking about, for the average consumer who owns a phone, the most important thing is being able to take pictures inside, Christmas pictures, birthday pictures, all of the nice dinners, like whatever that is. What?
Bar pictures.
Yeah, exactly. But all of those things, that's what matters probably more to us than anything else. I'm a big fan of not having any phones at concerts. But it's just like, I don't like looking through screens. But I think that beyond that, I think that the really being able to take pictures of your friends and family and actually have them turn out. My wife has been putting off getting a phone upgrade for quite some time now, and now the pressure's on. Now that it's out, I'm unrelenting about that. She's got to move from her 5 to something a little newer.
Alex, so the big controversy this year. Go ahead, Alex.
I was going to say, she sends me pictures now from the iPhone 5, and all she gets back is, just think of how much better this would be if you had a new phone.
So I think the big controversy this year is that people are going to be split, because there are people who are going to prefer the Galaxy S7 camera, and there are going to be people who are going to prefer the iPhone 7 camera. And the big difference is that Samsung does a lot of processing. People traditionally say they crush the blacks, they boost the sat, to give a picture that more people actually like right on the screen, where Apple's thing has always been, we're going to do the best reproduction we can of what you see. And then if you want to crush the blacks or you want to boost the sat, that's up to you. And those are strange positions, because Apple, for example, they're fusing the camera. You can access the separate cameras with third-party apps, but they're abstracting that away. They just want you to touch the button and shoot. But they don't want to do that with the final product, Andy. And I'm not certain which is actually best. I know I'm just going to pull raw data from now on. But for a normal person, I'm not sure which approach is the better one.
Yeah, it's this is why it's hard for I'm a real avid amateur photographer. I had 45 minutes to kill on Sunday. I was going to the John Hodgman live show in Boston. Had 45 minutes. I decided I'm going to spend 30 of it in the Boston Public Library, because I had my camera with me, a place I've photographed a million times. That I'm that kind of photographer. But the thing is, people just like having shots that look good to them. And that's a complaint that's a common about real, quote, serious photographers about what Samsung does to their pictures. But there is a reason why if you go to Burger King or Wendy's, that you get a burger that has lots of onion seasoning and lots of salt and lots of fat. It's not a gourmet burger, but people like salt and they like fat. And these are you're not there to tell people what kind of pictures they should have. They want to be happy with the photos that they get. And the difference is that on Android, for instance, you've always had the ability to pull RAW directly from it. So if you are that serious photographer, you can get you will get the real, like, fancy pants, like super, super red sunset. But you also get a RAW image, so that if you're taking pictures in Adobe Lightroom, you can then adjust it to your heart's content. I admit that I was having some fun with people the Thursday that so many analysts and writers were getting briefings in New York City. The tip off was everybody's Instagram, including yours, was blowing up with, like, every out. You could tell, like, they left the site at like 1:02, and then it took them 5 minutes to get to this place, and then you'd suddenly see from 1:05 to like 1:17 a million photos of like the same sort of location. And so I happened to have posted a picture from briefings that I had in New York City a few days ago. And someone said with my cheap like Nexus 5X camera. So, wow, I can't believe the iPhone 7 takes such great pictures. I can't wait to see your review. I have to admit that I was having some fun with people. I decided I'm not going to tell people. I'm not going to say, no, you got tricked. But I'm going to start posting all the pictures from New York that I was going to post over the next couple of weeks. I'm going to Instagram them all in the next 2 or 3 hours. And not tell people that this was just the Nexus 5X basically being shot raw and then with the pictures adjusted the way that I like them. So this is it's there's no right way to do it. And the thing that must I don't know if we use the word frustrate the engineers at Apple and Samsung is that they're making cameras that can take pictures that are good enough to have an 11 by 17 that goes over the sofa table for the next 30 or 40 years of a beautiful moment. But the thing is, most people are just going to put them on Instagram. And at that level, pretty much any camera is going to take a great picture. And it's going to be hard to tell the difference between an iPhone photo and something you took with a mid-range camera if you strictly go through Instagram.
Totally watermark them. The other thing that impressed me, though, Alex, was the P3 color space, because you got wide gamut color being captured by the lens, managed by Apple's color management system, and then displayed. The display is also P3, and the same with the Baby Pearl, the same with the iMac. And I didn't expect the reds and oranges to pop the way they did, but side by side, you could see a huge difference.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of the next new things that we're going to be looking at is how do we, more than how do we add contrast, how do we really get as much out of this? And how do we almost create something that is able to create a real record? I mean, we have to remember that now, I think more and more people are, this is what they're using. This is their primary camera. This is not, they're not using a snap-in, something that, as we grew up, some kind of camera that they carried around. They're not using a DSLR. They're not using a Micro Four Thirds. They're using an iPhone or a Samsung or whatever their phone is. And so being able to gather that information and make it truly something that, A, you're going to see a lot more images, a lot more in the imagery, but also something that you can actually print, I think is going to be more and more important. I think a lot of us, are mostly putting stuff on Instagram, but I print things every once in a while. And so having, where Apple is going, I think the direction we're seeing these cameras go is they're recognizing, and they probably recognized quite some time ago, that this is people's primary camera. And I think that this is what they're going to remember, all these photos and all the moments that they have with. So, the camera becomes, one of the most important parts of a phone. I mean, the phone becomes, I think, less and less important. The camera becomes more and more important as we kind of shift what we do with it.
I went to Dolby when I was out in San Francisco, and they showed us a 1080p print of, or 1080p version of Star Wars next to a 4K print of Star Wars. 1080p one was HDR, and it looked so much better than the 4K version. And I'm just getting to this point where I think we're close. Like, it's still expensive, but you can buy an HDR TV now. And my camera and my computer all have these HDR, or at least P3 displays. Apple, the software, I believe, goes to Rec 2020, which is the next even wider gamut standard. And Andy, I'm going to be drowning in deep color and loving it in the next few years.
Yeah, I'm at this. I'm telling myself that this is the year that I replace the HD TV I bought 7 or 8 years ago. And what I'm learning about HDR now, going to my half tech columnist, half consumer, who's actually looking to spend $1,000 sometime in the next 3 days, three months, position. What I'm finding so much is that really is, it's not so much about the numbers of, oh, here's how many pixels there are, here's how much contrast there is here. It really comes down to look at it, what gives, there are lots of different ways to create a great image. And so if someone is simply trying to tell you that this is a faster response time, so it's a better picture, or this has a different backlighting system, so it's a better picture, that might not actually satisfy the human urge. It's human software, not human number counting, that actually does this stuff. And it's the same thing with cameras. I've actually changed the way that I write about and review camera phones. It used to be I will give you a five-way shootout between five different cameras, and I'll even give you like pixel by pixel blow up. So if you want to take a look at what the noise reduction is like and what the ISO noise is like, what the sharpness is like, I'll do that. I think I realized that this had become counterproductive, where I'm letting people trick themselves into thinking that, wow, in that picture I can see more of the window than I can in this picture. So therefore, picture three must be a better camera. Well, No, it just happened to circumstances were correct to create a sharper image of that corner of the window in these situations. It's the reason why I keep saying that I keep thinking that the iPhone is the best camera phone ever made is because it keeps getting down to the best, most important feature of all, where you take it out, you press the button. Did you get a picture that instant? Or did it delay a second and a half? Did it lock up? Did it put you in a different mode? No. If you hold down that button, you will get as many pictures as God intended you to ever have with human sight, and you'll definitely get it. So that's why it's the best camera that you can buy today.
Well, I think that one of the things is that we have a lot of us. There's probably 10% of us that are, you know, paying attention to every spec and every bit. And I think that 90% of the folks that have these cameras, you know, what they really care about is exactly what Andy's kind of touching on, which is that when they push the button, they want it to be in focus. They want it to not be grainy, and they, you know, and they want the right people to be in focus or whatever, you know, and that's pretty much, I mean, for most people, I know, definitely for my wife, you know, and my parents, that's all they care about is that they get that when they took the photo, it reminds them of what happened and it doesn't look messed up, you know? And I think that, and that turns out to be a very complicated thing to do. but I think that, and I think that Apple does it probably better than anyone else right now.
Yeah. The only thing I'd fault them for is I just do wish that they would remove 70% of the clutter from the camera app. The number of times where I've taken out the phone, I've been walking around holding the phone and want to take a picture quickly, but, oh, okay, I'm in black and white video mode. Like, why? or I'm in some sort of effects mode.
I've accidentally gotten into pano. I've accidentally gotten into video. I mean, I kind of wish that stuff was hidden a little bit more because I just 99% of the time, I just want to pick it up and take a photo.
Yeah, and it annoys me because things like the filter effects, I never imagine me saying that another 1,000 times. Never use that feature ever. But it's I'll take out my phone and it's in that mode, and I'm like, is there a way that I can just put duct tape over that part of the screen so that it's not possible to activate that feature? And
they swapped it with the selfie button, Andy. So at least it's further out of the way now. Ugh. And now you can selfie all the time.
it's one of the least Apple-like designs I've ever seen. They're masters at figuring out how can we simplify this, how can we remove clutter, and it's like looking at a box of Legos that's been like fallen onto the floor, and then you just simply put like an iOS 10 box around it and a circle in the middle of it, and there's your user interface.
Hey, the one thing that was fun for me is we were filming near Battery Park. I forget the name of the park. And I was shooting over the fountain. I know the fountain.
That's where I shot my slow motion demo pictures last year when the slow motion came out.
It was great. And then Serenity yelled, drop it. And just immediately I had to, like, I was screaming. In my head I was screaming, but I dropped the phone. And then she's like, do it again. And we did 5 or 6 takes of me dropping the phone into that fountain and then diving after it. And luckily, I didn't even think about it, but luckily the Apple Watch is waterproof too, and picking the phone out. And it survived. And I've seen demos on the internet now of people doing like underwater photography and videography with it. The only thing that scares me though is that Apple very plainly says that water damage is still not covered under warranty. And just understanding the technology, I know that it's never 100%, and also it wears out over time and can be eroded over time depending on what it comes in contact with. So I'm just waiting for someone who takes it scuba diving or something to just totally destroy their phone, and then that'll be the next big internet thing.
They are very clear that they say don't take it in salt water. Yeah. Like it's like, also, like, yeah.
There's so many different ways to are they going to come up with a 40-page document that explains here's what we mean by waterproof or water resistant? And also iFixit did one of their really great teardowns and came to the conclusion that a lot of the water resistance comes down to the quality of the adhesives and the seals that they've put into the device. So that would mean that if for any reason you needed that phone repaired, it would be super, super difficult for Apple to take that apart and then put it back together again so that all of the integrity of those seals are intact. I don't know what the plan is, but it just seems to me as though there's so many problems with including water damage as part of the warranty coverage that it's just simpler to say, by the way, don't think that you can drop this down to the depths of Atlantis, have a balloon automated, bring it back up again, and we will still pay for it for the cracked screen.
I'd like a copay like the cracked screen. Yeah, I think that would be great. Like it's 20 or 90 or whatever the deductible is for that, and they'll do it twice or something.
Yeah.
And then maybe everyone's happy. But it held up for me and it worked fine. And we're seeing some great things. But again, please don't think that you can use it like a GoPro. Even the Active, the Samsung Galaxy Active, which is much higher level waterproofing than the iPhone, failed in two Consumer Reports tests. Not that I'm a huge fan of Consumer Reports, but you know, you can always get one that doesn't work or one that's worn out. And it could be 3 months from now and suddenly bye-bye phone. So please,
you never know that those.
And I think it's great. When you accidentally drop it somewhere or you're out in the rain or you're out in the thing, you don't have to worry at every moment that it's wet. So I think that is a great feature. And as long as people don't use it, that feature as a constant feature that they're actually depending on, I think that most people are going to be okay.
Yeah. My daily shooter camera is the Olympus OMD EM1 that is fully weather resistant, and the ability to simply, I'm walking through Yosemite or I'm walking downtown Boston and it starts raining and I don't even think about, do I get a plastic bag and can I put this inside my backpack somehow? I was like, no, it just stays where it was and I don't worry about it because it's just that good. And it's the exact same thing. I don't think the feature is important in the sense that people will be able to do underwater photography or necessarily trust that if they drop it in the toilet, there'll be one less reason for them to want to go and get it back. But I think it's more like it's raining or it's been in your pocket and then you don't realize how much you've been sweating until you pull it out and say, oh, it's actually dripping from the speaker port. Okay. Oh, that's right. I perspire and it condenses on solid objects.
Or even your friend pushes you in the pool and doesn't realize you have your phone on you. Things happen.
That friend is still a jerk. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I'm sorry. I apologize to everyone I've done that. No.
Now, so, Renee, I do notice something odd in your ear.
You have something. AirPod odd.
A little something there. How's that working?
Yeah, so those are the AirPods. They're not out yet, but Apple did give some of them out to preview, and I've been trying to test it out. I'm not wearing both now because you only need one for mono. You put both in, it goes to stereo. And the secret is if you use them in mono, you can keep switching them back and forth, and the case will keep recharging them. So instead of 5 hours of stereo, you have like 5 plus 5 plus 5 plus 5, effectively, I think 2 days of mono listening time. And so far, they've been really good. I mean, I'm not losing them, and usually my ears are horrible for these things. And the audio and
usually
is
my
quite
experience
good.
Is that when the phone's in my pocket and I have a Bluetooth set up, you know, I end up getting some kind of breakup. But it sounds like you're not having any of those issues.
No, and I'm using it on a Mac that I really shouldn't be. Like it pairs automatically using that W1 chip on anything running iOS 10 or OS 10, sorry, or Mac OS Sierra. But I'm using an older El Cap machine because I haven't updated my podcasting machine. And I got a warning saying this is not designed to be used with this software. Please update. But now it's working fine. I hear you loud and clear. I'm not using the mic because I have this giant mic. I didn't want to mess with the quality of the recording, but the audio quality is great.
And the phone, and with the phone, you don't find that you ever have a lot of breakup or any kind of, you know, that kind of clicking that you typically get
none.
With a lot of the Bluetooth.
And you double tap it and you use Siri, and it's been working. I've been using it in the car. I can hear perfectly. I use it on the plane ride the entire time. I use it. Sprinter and I both used it in New York when we were walking around. So far, really, really good. I think the level of technology inside them handles a lot of, actually putting a chip, making them tiny computers, solves a lot of problems that devices that weren't that smart suffered through.
Right.
I'm encouraged and also worried about some of the features that are built into them that are designed to help you, because my biggest source of frustration in all technology are devices that try to help you but are not very smart about it. So
you're writing a letter, Andy.
Right, or it's like, oh well, you've taken the earbud out, and so I'm going to automatically pause the playback because you're taking your earbud out, and I'm going to put it back in again, and oh, you've disconnected, and you said, okay, but how about if you just, okay, wait, how about you took it out, but then you actually laid it horizontally, but then you tilted a little bit, so I think you mean go to the next track. I'm going to be really helpful and go to the next track. I've been reading some people first impressions from people who have them and have been saying that this have run into situations in which they've been annoyed by some of the automatic try to figure out what I should do for you automatically in this instance features of it. Have you had any bad experiences with it like that?
No, that's fine. Like I understood it. It was explained to me that you put one in, it goes to mono, put the second one in, it goes to stereo, take one out, it pauses. You can hit play again. It'll resume in mono, tap twice to answer or hang up on a call, tap twice for Siri. But that's about all you can do with these. And that's where I think annoyance will come from, because tapping twice, waiting for Siri, saying increase volume 20%, lower volume 50%, skip to next track. That's a lot more work than just clicking a button on a remote control. So the parts that it does make more convenient, it makes super convenient, but at the expense of the more complicated actions, which then become, you know, exponentially more complicated.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I want to be next to someone on the bus saying, oh, more volume, please. Less volume.
Well, you can do it on your phone or your watch, too. Like, if you need to, you can tap it on your watch or your phone. But if you really want to be hands-free, you got to have a conversation.
You have to be polite.
So it wouldn't be an iPhone launch if there weren't at least a few gates to go around. A couple of years ago, it was Ben Gate. Last year, it was Chip Gate. This year, they're like mini gates, maybe, I don't know, fences or something that happened. The first one was with the home button. Apple did say at the event, and I remember this clearly, that it's a capacitive button. The same ring that detects Touch ID now detects you pressing the home button, and that lets it stay in a low power state until you're actually going to press it. So it's a little bit of power efficiency there. But if you put something covering your thumb, for example, if you're wearing regular gloves, it has no idea that there's anything on it. This doesn't feel any electricity, so it doesn't activate. And that, you know, was concerning to some people. It was pointed out very quickly that all you could do was press the home button because the screen still requires capacitive touch. You still had to have actual skin contact to do that. But people were used to just turning on the screen to look at notifications. You can do that with Raise to Wake. But, you know, that's fine. What made it a little bit more of a problem is that some people said it didn't work with capacitive gloves either. Those are the kind of gloves you get that have a coating on them that does allow electrical transfer. We tested a whole bunch of them. Serenity tested several pairs. I have 10 pairs because every family member thinks it's the perfect gift for me any holiday or birthday season. So I took them all out. And even the dollar store, like the cheapest ones I had, worked fine as long as the capacitive material actually touched the ring and wasn't degraded in any way. So it was fine for me. But Andy, it is more complication. It's not just a physical button anymore. It's something that has to have certain conditions met now to work.
Yeah, there are a whole bunch of knock-on effects every time you do something that to change a design that is simple and it's logical and it's rational. It's something you're really motivated to do, but you're not going to find out how it affects people's lives until you actually do it. And that's a classic problem. They're problems that are affected by people in the warmer climes that those of us in New England and Chicago and Minnesota said this is going to be a totally different device as soon as the mercury drops. And there are a number of I'm like you. I do have a number of those capacitive gloves. Mostly I have sets of burner gloves where I've just literally like snipped off a fingertip just so that I can make sure that I will have a finger free. And there's also the nasal interface sometimes.
Yes.
To make that work. That is a bummer. Also, some people are complaining rightly that they have a diminished sight. They have special needs when it comes to operating a phone, and the presence of a tactile clicky button is a lot more easier for them to manage than something that is a conjectural button. Even though there is a way to, you can actually feel where the actual sensor is, and the haptics
it
are
feels
supposed
the same.
To give you the feedback.
The home button actually feels the same. It just, the click doesn't feel the same, but the physical button by itself feels right. The same.
Yeah. And also some people have been talking about workarounds. If you go into accessibility, I've got it right here. There's a feature called the display accommodations. I'm sorry, not display accommodations. It's where is it?
Rest finger to unlock.
Everyone in Silicon Valley. Touch accommodations. I don't understand this capacitance thing. What's the issue here? Yeah. You know, like nobody in Northern California is like, I don't know.
You lack the capacity, Alex.
So the winner mode might be to turn on touch accommodations, which says if you have trouble using the touch screen, adjust the following settings to change how the screen will respond to touches. And there's a bunch of ways that we'll just it won't make assumptions, and you will still be able to use it the way that it's a little bit easier to use it with a capacitive pair of gloves than before. It's not intended like a lot of the great features in accessibility was designed to make the devices accessible to people who have certain limitations physically. But there's always little fun things for people who just want things to work a little differently. For those of us who do not have the eyes of a hawk, there's a new feature that will essentially turn the phone into a really wonderful magnifier. So that if you're like in dim lighting and there's something, there's some text on a package or on a bottle, or this, or dim light in a menu, you just can't like there's not enough light so that your hardware can really lock in on what those words are. It will light amplify it, it will magnify it, and then it will lock that image so that you can then read it at your discretion and at your leisure. So there's, as always, the last thing that I do whenever I'm testing out a new version of iOS is actually to go into accessibility and see what has changed and how can I exploit it to my own ends.
So I think it's going to be a biggest problem for people in border states, because once you're above the wall, I mean, we have capacitive gloves, but none of us use them. It's the same thing. Like, you go by a Canadian hospital, and because you can't smoke inside, there are doctors outside in their scrubs, like for 20 minutes at minus 30 degrees, just smoking there and using their phones, and they're fine. So we're used to having frozen appendages, but I think it's the people who do have those gloves who are afraid of a little bit of cold. You really have nothing to worry about. It'll work the same as your screen. The thing that I think, Alex, is going to be at least more of a concern for people to have it is the hissing effect. Basically, it's a coil whine where the new A10 processor, which is a beast, it is a beast of a processor. It is so fast. On some people's phones, it's creating a higher pitched noise. I tried a ton of devices. I listened to iPads, to MacBooks, to home electronics devices, to stereos. You can hear the same bass noise on almost any of them when they're under load. But for some people, for some reason, whether it's the waterproof coating or just the components are in the wrong position on their unit, they hear it really loudly. And I wonder if post Samsung climate, we're all a little bit sensitive to this.
I don't know. I think I'd like to hear it. I haven't heard any of this so far. And I don't have a 7. Traditionally, I'm always somewhere where I can't order when it first goes off, and then I have to wait 2 or 3 months to get my phone. So I'm not going to have a 7 anytime soon. But with any device, I haven't heard any of this, and I haven't heard recordings of people who have said that they've heard this. And I'm kind of curious how loud it really is. I mean, there's definitely a lot of things that drive us all crazy, and I'm sure that it's there. But the question is, like, once you put it inside of a case, which you should always do.
It's only when it's under load, like restoring, or when the processor is really firing on heavy and the room is quiet, you'll hear that sound.
And I've never heard that ever. But, and I'm usually pretty sensitive to sound, but maybe it's just that I'm always in a loud environment when I'm pushing my phone. So I don't know for sure, but I think that it's probably something that is there's a phone, you know, the phones have some registration issues. There's probably a handful, you know, some, when we say a handful is probably, you know, a very small percentage could be 10,000 people or 15,000 people that have hissing. But I think that it's probably some kind of small registration issue with some of these, which is why... Yeah. I think I always benefit from the fact that I missed the first round. All a bunch of stuff, you know, like I always think I'm going to do it that night, and then I never do. And then it's like, not now, it's not until November, and I'm just like, I'll just wait until it's in the store.
That's a really good point. That they test these things thoroughly, but it's not until they put millions of devices in the hands of millions of people who have different levels of hearing, and also in different environments, that you're going to figure out what the defects are, what the bumps might be in the manufacturing process. So if you wait for, there can be a hardware revision does nothing more than improves the return rate so that you have fewer defective devices, and just makes things a little bit simpler to build. And that's also a good time to mention the general advice. Anytime that you buy a brand new Apple device, meaning it's not just new to you, but this is they've just released it, if there's anything you don't like about it, do not hesitate to go back to the Apple store with it, because this is a time for the first 2 or 3 weeks where they are hyper vigilant about anything that it might be wrong with this device. So if you dropped it and the screen shattered and you thought that, wow, it's like I've dropped my old phone on this carpet a couple times without any problems, why did this one break? You're not necessarily screwed, because each store might have sort of a bounty where the mothership has said, we want you to try to capture, we're going to allow you to capture as many as X devices with broken screens, X devices that have connectivity problems with the cellular, X devices that have connectivity problems with Wi-Fi, things that have unusual dings. If something's making a buzzing noises, these are the situations where you take it back. You don't wind up having a long conversation with the genius. The genius does not have a long conversation with their manager. They immediately bring out a black coffin It's referred to as the capture. They actually will capture the they call it capturing the phone. It will be sent directly back to the mothership. You will be given a brand new phone, maybe, and like no questions asked, just to okay, we're awesome. We're just going to solve this problem for you immediately. And it's not maybe not something that they would do for people a month later or 2 months later. This is the time where Apple wants to know how are these things performing in the real world, and the only way they can figure that out is to capture devices that are causing problems and then dissect it down to the molecular level and see what was different about this one that seemed to be different from the reference products that we have certified as being built and operating as they should.
And not to be the curmudgeon, but I find that I mean, while a lot of us get excited, that thinking of the release date as 3 months out from the release date really makes your life
lowers your anxiety level.
They're going to make more than 80 of them. You're kind of okay if you're going to wait. They'll make.
You'll get one eventually, and the second it will be a .2 version. You know, like there'll be a couple like. Yeah. Oh, right.
It's launch weekend, so every outlet worth their viewers is looking for a hot Apple story. And we saw this on NBC. It showed up on NBC yesterday. And we're living in a climate where there literally are phones that are burning. So people are super sensitive about it. This is a processor, has nothing to do with the battery. It's a well-known electrical phenomenon. I talked to some engineers about it, and a bunch of engineers contacted me in the comments and Twitter. And it can be annoying. And if it does annoy you, absolutely. If it's loud enough to annoy you, take it back. But you don't have anything to worry about. And with that, we're going to toss to our good friend Leo Laporte, because he wants to tell us about something awesome, and I think it's called Texture.
Thanks, guys. We will have more Mac Break Weekly in a little bit, but I've got to tell you about our fine sponsor. In fact, somebody that's saving my life as I travel long airplane flights, a lot of downtime, a lot of waiting rooms. That's why I love Texture. Magazine's a great source of entertainment. They're great for reading short stories, fiction and nonfiction. But of course, the problem is, you know, they're expensive. I'm not going to subscribe to a year's worth of magazines for one or two articles in that time. And I don't want to go buy the newsstand edition every time. Just think of the coffee table clutter. So when Texture came out, I was thrilled. It's basically Netflix for magazines. And you get access to 200 of the best magazines in the world. I mean, all of them, The New Yorker, The National Geographic, Wired, Vanity Fair. I'm telling you, the magazines I read. Actually, I like to look at Billboard and Ad Age, too. Those are kind of trade magazines. Probably not magazines I would buy or subscribe to, because it's Billboard's hundreds of dollars a year. But the fact that I've got it as part of my Texture subscription is awesome. I should show you my iPad, because I've already, you know, I got all my magazines that I want to have on the trip with me favorited. And once you favorite them, you can say, I want you to download each new issue when it comes out. So they're automatically on the iPad, even if I'm in the air or somewhere without a connection. That is awesome. That is wonderful. And the best magazines, you get every page that's in the current issue, plus back issues, plus bonus features that you would not get in a magazine, in a print magazine, like video. And the best part is you can use your Texture subscription on up to 5 devices per account. So you have it on your phone and your tablet. It's great. Or in my case, Lisa's got it and I have it. We have a family subscription. You sign up for Texture right now, you'll get insider access to all the content from the world's most in-demand publications, including, as I said, National Geographic, Men's Health, Wired, Interview Magazine, Rolling Stone. I can go on and on and on. Go to texture.com/twit right now. Take a look at all the magazines and get your free trial. That's the best way to find out. The free trial, texture.com/twit. A world of great reading, stuff that's not on the internet, but it's on your iPad, your iPhone, your Android device. Texture.com/twit. Now back to MacBreak.
Leo, it's great that you're still with us, at least in spirit. So the big news today, we were talking about the release, the big weekend news, but the big news today is that Mac OS Sierra launched about an hour before the show starts. I've had a chance to use it because I am foolish and I put the beta on my computer the minute WWDC's keynote ends. And sometimes I suffer for it. Sometimes I'm happy about it. This year, it was fairly stable for me. And if you had a chance to play around with Sierra at all?
Yeah, I haven't installed the shipping version because I have not lived a pure and chaste life. And if God wants to make trouble for me, I'm basically saying, hi, God, I've got an hour before a podcast. Please strike me down.
Like it's me, Andy.
Sinner as I am, yes. But I've had the beta on my secondary Mac, and it's been working pretty great. I installed it for good when iOS 10 came out because there are a few features that kind of get nasty at you unless you say, wait a minute, you're not running Sierra. Why are you running as a Sierra? But I find it very, very stable. I find it not a titanic upgrade, but a pretty safe one. And as usual, my usual advice is if you can wait a couple weeks just in case there's a deal breaker coming up. But I found it a pretty good experience.
So that means Alex is going to be waiting a year or two for his production machines.
Yeah, I thought about it. It's just been a busy summer. So I was like, well, I'll just wait until Andy and Renee tell me it's okay.
Are you an El Capitan yet?
I'm on. Yeah. I have. Done okay. There's actually a handful of machines that are still on 185 or 186,
They're Intel though, right?
Yeah, well, the thing is that the funny thing is that they there's big stickers on them that say, 185, like do not change this, because there's some playback stuff that we use that, gets a little less stable as the upgrades go up. So we've got a couple of these old machines that are, they're relatively new machines, but with old operating systems. But I moved the El Capitan like last week. I mean, it's been great. I mean, when Apple releases, at least announces a new one, that usually tells me that it's time to upgrade to the last one. That's pretty much how I roll.
So the most impressive thing to me with this update is that Apple continues to take Continuity, which was released 2 years ago, and is a technology that doesn't just sync data, but syncs the state of activity between multiple devices and do pretty interesting things with them. And this year we got universal clipboard, so I can copy from my iPhone, paste onto my Mac. We've got auto unlock. So as long as my Apple Watch comes in proximity, it'll just open up my Mac. And we've got
Siri.
I'm blanking what the third one was, but there's at least three cases in this operating system where, Apple Pay, which is done on Safari on the web, but is authorized by your Apple Watch or your iPhone. And that to me is a sort of integration that Apple does really well. I mean, I can't believe there's still no handoff for iTunes, because I would love to be able to start a movie on my Mac and walk away with my iPhone or come back on my iPad and watch it on my iMac. But Andy, this is one of those things where I think the technology was a good idea at the time, and like extensibility, they just keep finding more and more and more really cool ideas to do with it.
Yeah, it's a core technology, which means that the news announcement is boring for most consumers, really exciting for developers. Then a year later, becomes really exciting for consumers as app developers figure out how to make that work for them. It's a tough feature though, because you really do have to be aware of it. You have to be aware that there's a shared clipboard between these two devices. It also has to be relevant to you if you're doing I was using it a couple of times last week, mostly just to test it out. Most of the time when I want to move a small piece of information, that information is important enough that I would like to actually put it into Google Keep or Evernote or the great internet shared clipboard that I rely on. I'm glad that Siri works a lot more like it does on iOS than it does on macOS now. There are a lot of extra features that let you control hardware features of the Mac that weren't there before. There's a lot more Spotlight sort of stuff. Now Spotlight doesn't feel like it was born on another planet from the version of Search and Spotlight that was on that's on iOS. So there's a lot more, dare I say, Google Now sort of functionality where there's a search bar and a search box that remembers the stuff you're interested in and lets you kind of keep it there for reference. Lots of things that are they're not going to immediately change your life until the first time you realize that this you make a concerted effort to like go to the iBook store, download the actual PDF, the actual iBooks manual for it. You will see that there are features that you didn't even guess existed. You start playing with them and then suddenly you start remembering to use them. So I myself forget that Apple does document this entire thing fully. They give you almost a $35 missing manual sort of book on here's how to use all the new features here, as opposed to the sales brochure that you'll find on Apple.com. There are oftentimes that I just don't know that something happens until I actually read that book. So it wasn't after 1 week of using it full time, like I said, it hasn't really revolutionized my world, but it's a good step forward. And it doesn't have to help me in the 100 different ways it can help me. All it has to do is find 3 or 4 things that are kind of tough for me right now and make that part of my world a little bit better.
Cable Sasser was saying how he used it to paste passwords between the two, and it was much better than typing it on his iPhone.
Yeah, well, and I think that one of the things that Apple does really well, and I think people get disappointed that Apple is not, you know, creating one revolution after the other, but the evolution that we're seeing both with the OS X and with the phone is an evolution. You know, it's saying we're going to make all these things a little bit better. We're going to do it kind of in a stable way. We're not going to try to redesign the entire interface and have you know, and some of it will work and some of it will break and some of it will catch fire. You know, like it's it is, you know, they you know, there's things like we're just going to make, you know, everything just, you know, be a little smoother, a little, you know, and I think for a lot of, and one of the things I've been thinking about a lot is that I think that in some ways Apple, you know, users and iPhone users, in a lot of ways they, you know, it's not that they buy an iPhone not because they love phones so much, it's because they don't, you know, they kind of want it just to be part of their environment, not something that is, you know, all encompassing, and they just want it to work.
The big thing for me was Siri on the Mac. Like, I think in fairness, it took way too long to get there, because for us, it's nice to have. But for people in the accessibility community, there was really no way to control a Mac, no native way to control a Mac with their voice. And we've seen how empowering that is with the iPhone, with the iPad, even with the Apple TV, and just basic voice control and especially sophisticated Siri control is a difference between that device being usable to them or not. So I'm super, super happy. You know, it doesn't do everything yet. It doesn't do home control, which I would think would be normal for a device that's most of the time in your home, but you know, there's always limits to what it can do. I like that you can search, you can do complex searches for files, you can get to settings almost immediately, you can query for things that would otherwise take you spelunking through the computer to find. I think all that is great. I didn't think I'd like it. I didn't think I'd use it because I'm a control freak, but all the new storage optimization stuff, if you can find it, because it is incredibly buried in, it's a new storage manager that you basically have to use Spotlight to find, or if you know it, you can go to the Apple menu and click on About This Mac and get there. But it's really great. I was always hitting the storage limit. I was continuously getting that your disk is almost full, go delete stuff, and it would be at the worst time, like when I'm rendering a Final Cut video from a hands-on at an event, and I'd have to go scrounge for space. But immediately it showed me all these iOS backup files and old render files that I could delete. And it got me down to about half full on my disk, and I've stayed there. The one that I'm more cautious about is the automatic syncing of the desktop and the automatic, you know, sort of quasi-deletion of files locally because there's a safety file cause. Because for me, it's I render Logic files and Final Cut files to my desktop, and they start syncing. And if I'm tethered, there just goes all my data. Like, it's just, I want to be able to drag it to Dropbox. But also, it's a sync service. It's not a backup service. And your stuff could just vanish, or you could go offline. It's the same problem I have sometimes with Google Docs. You could just go offline and just not have access to a file you need. So that, to me, I think people should be highly cautious of.
Yeah. Also, Apple doesn't have the greatest track record for me for, trust us, we'll manage your files. We'll manage the hell out of your files. As anybody who switched over to Apple Music found out that, oh boy, you really simplified my collection. You simplified it down to 3 albums and 2 MP3 files. Thank you very much. But if you, more than any other release, definitely, you should always make sure you have a recent backup anyway, just as a matter of course. But this is one of those times where you're double sure that you run super duper the hour before you are about to install the upgrade, make a backup on another drive, unplug that drive, put it someplace safe where Apple can't see it and can't hurt it possibly, and then start it up there. I also tried the optimizer. I noted that it was able to find at least 20 or 30 gigabytes of storage that I could get rid of. I noted it. I did not have the guts to push that button and say, yes, please delete files from my hard drive. That's definitely one of those things where I'm going to wait 2 or 3 months to see how much Jim Dalrymple might or might not be affected by this, decision.
I think Jason Snell wrote that he was. I could bid him at least a couple times. So, be extremely cautious.
Letting the machine delete my files is not something that I'll ever do. I don't care what anyone says. I'm like, no, won't.
Well, I don't understand the use case as much, because if you're in a situation where you are right at the edge of storage, and it starts moving older files out of the way. I mean, you've got bigger problems. It's the kind of thing where you really need to sort of do that management beforehand, because I don't see that being particularly helpful for you. But I think, again, the other stuff is really, really good. The dictionary management, all that kind of stuff. So I would keep that one off, but flip the switch on the other ones pretty quickly.
Mm. Well, and I think that one of the things that is a challenge for all of the consumers that are now shooting all these phones, and as the phones shoot bigger images, like, where do you put them all? You know, I think that the last time I moved my wife's, her stuff from one computer to another, it was like a thumb drive, 2 gig thumb drive moved everything, from one computer. Now it's getting to be a problem. And I think that people are trying to figure that out right now. And I don't think that they have figured it out as far as how they're going to actually make all of that work.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of it's such a mature operating system, and there are still big holes for things that I'd like them to fill. So obviously they're going to keep going, but things like Photos this time. Photos was a complete rewrite. It was kind of wonky at first. It's been getting better now. It has a new color management system, so it can maintain all those wide gamut color profiles. And if you move something to a device that's got a lower color profile, it'll keep the high gamut information so that if it then moves on back. I mean, there's a whole bunch of super smart stuff going on there. The markup extension is in Photos, where I think Photos and Messages, where I think it should have been for a long time. There's a new Brilliance slider. There's just a lot of little nice things. And Music, although it's still trapped inside purgatory called iTunes, it's gotten the same kind of refresh and redesign. So there's quite a lot going on in there, but still holes and bugs. So I'm guessing next year we'll get another new version or something.
Are you still having this? Are you having the problem where that it wants to bring the same images in over and over and over again from your iPhone? Have you seen that?
Because I let iCloud Photo Library do that.
Huh?
I let iCloud Photo Library do that. So they're just there. I never do it manually.
I'm always terrified that I'm going to lose my photos. And so I go to sync it, and it literally, there's a certain date that it starts at, and it just brings them all in over again, again, and again.
I have them. My iMac keeps everything local, doesn't do any of the off of the online storage, and then that gets backed up to an external drive. So as long as it hits my iMac at some point, it's safe, because it goes to Time Machine and it goes to Super Duper. And that, I think fairly, and it's an iCloud.
It's a bug that I've seen people talk about online. They just haven't, I don't think anyone's really figured out exactly how to get it to stop doing that. Sometimes people's iPhones are basically, it just wants to pull down a lot of the images, and it seems to be caught up in one. It'll go back to a certain date. It's not like it's backing up my entire iPhone, but yeah. So I've gone to doing what you're doing, which is let it go to the cloud and pull it down there. But it feels so much safer. I'm really about wired things. I know that I poo-pooed the whole wireless headphone thing and everything else, but that just means because I'm moving to a Lightning connector, I'm still going to use wired connections. I don't trust this wireless thing. It's too whiz-bang.
Indistinguishable from magic.
Yeah. I don't think that any data that I generate is as heavily and automatically and secretly backed up as my photos. I have to actually think to remember all the different times that I have clicked a button in haste because I'm installing a piece of software, and then realize that, okay, so now Dropbox has a copy of every photo I take with my phone. Google Photos has a picture of everything that's in these libraries. Apple now has a backup of this. It's probably in 4 or 5 different places. And there are times where I totally forget that even screenshots I'm taking are now from my iPad wind up on my Android phone. Or actually, that's handy. I was going to try to solve the problem of moving a file from here to there, but okay. So yeah, I still haven't trusted Apple to manage my photos yet, but I should mention that I'm full of crap in many ways because I seem to trust everybody to do everything with everything except for delete stuff.
Well,
I don't even trust Google, by the way. Right now, I can't. Google released a really cool app that I really need to download and check out before tonight.
Oh, Trips.
Trips. And I've said, you don't have enough room. And saying, by the way, you have 500 and something megabytes of photos that have already been backed up in full resolution. Do you want me to delete them from the phone? And it's, I feel exactly like my grandparents or even my dad, leaving the house for a week's vacation. We have to unplug the TV, our solid state modern TV, because if we leave it plugged in, it could explode and start a house fire. I'm now grandpa saying, but I don't want it to delete photos that I never have again. They're good. Grandpa, It's not going to delete them from everywhere. It's just going to delete them from the phone. They're still safe in those four other places I told you about. Yes, but it said delete. I don't like delete. It's a scary word.
No, I mean, that is so true. And one of the questions I had is Apple is touting that they're going to be doing what they call computer vision, which is artificial intelligence and machine learning locally. Like, you know, the famous quote, we don't need you to upload your photos to tell us what a mountain looks like. But that's the sort of statement that you have to prove. Like, you have to give me your software, let it run locally, not, you know, attached to the cloud, and give me great results, because I might still prefer to use it because it's more private and I have this philosophical paranoia about that stuff. But for most people, they just want really good search, and you've got to win them over. I was pleasantly surprised. I don't think it works anywhere nearly as well or granularly or as encompassingly as Google Photo Search. But I type in steak, I get steak. I type in coffee, I get so much coffee. I type in locations and dates and mountains and lakes. I find all this stuff. I can't type in iPhone or Mac or iPad, which to me is incomprehensible because it's Apple's own stuff. But maybe that's not part of the database they've worked on yet. But it worked well. But I don't know if it'll win over anybody from Google Photos yet.
Yeah, it's also one of those. I don't know if Google Photos, for that matter, will win people away from Apple Photos. There is such traction for whatever came built into the phone that seems to work okay. It's so hard to switch people from to Google Maps. It's so hard to switch people from Evernote if they're already using Evernote to Apple Notes. So it's just a hard thing to do. I fall for that myself. I have to pretty much have a calendar reminder to say, please look at other word processors, because you have not done a comprehensive search for other word processors in the past 2 years. And who knows, something wonderful might have been released since you fell in love with Scrivener. So it's hard to blast people from whatever is. People don't want the latest and the newest thing. They want something that works. And the stuff that's been working great for the past 2 years is something that it's hard to talk them out of.
Well, and I think that Apple Maps, specifically Apple Maps, has gotten a fair bit better. I was just in Rome a couple weeks ago, and I found that Apple Maps actually worked better than Google Maps, which I was kind of surprised at. Google Maps kept on taking me to restaurants that didn't exist anymore.
It really varies. I mean, we drove back from Ottawa, and neither of them did neither of them did what I would call an acceptable job. And it just showed me that mapping is hard. And I switch apps now depending on what city I'm in.
yeah, exactly. So yeah, no, there was we walked in the middle of the night trying to find the perfect Italian restaurant in the middle of the night, and ended up walking a lot, going from one restaurant to another that was like not closed or not open, like the information. And then we switched to Apple Maps, and then it was fine. So I think that a lot of it had to do with when they got the data. So Apple Maps is newer, so it got the data more recently than when Google got it, as far as what's open, what's there, that type of thing. So the persistence, I think, turned out to be the thing that was the problem. But I will admit that I still use Google Maps 99% of the time.
there's a lot of other stuff in here. I've got a review live. Jason Snell's got a review live. A lot of people have reviews live. So just go and take a look at them. I think we talked about this in the beginning, but the usual advice applies. If you don't absolutely need it today, wait a few days. Let the people who do install it today be your guinea pigs in case anything does pop up. But all in all, it's incredibly familiar. It looks the same. It behaves the same. It just has a bunch of new features. And if you are invested in Apple's ecosystem, if you have an Apple Watch or iPhone, it rewards you with that. It rewards you for that with enhanced continuity features. So you get even more extra cool stuff, including picture-in-picture mode.
I have to admit, I did download the beta for the iOS for my kids so they could play with programming, and which they love, by the way. They enjoy that a lot. But what they really, of course, loved was all the stuff they could do with messages. So my daughter is very disappointed with me because I haven't upgraded yet.
Father.
I'm so frustrated by that, because you can see them on the Mac, but like Georgia keeps sending me like pug stickers, and I just want to fire back, but I can't because I'm on my Mac. I have to go across the room and get my iPhone, and by then it's not as fun. I guess they ran out of time, where there wasn't enough resources, because I believe they had to pull people in to get iOS 10 messages finished. But I can't wait until messages is just fully featured and at parity, because I will unleash sticker fury on that woman. It'll be great.
It's interesting to watch my kids, use iPads and iPod touches and so on and so forth. They don't have a phone, but they, iPod, and because they just so seamlessly tie this stuff in. You know, I couldn't figure out how my daughter, I would tell her where I was in the world over the last couple of weeks, and she would immediately, I'd go, I'm in Lagos. Do you know where that is? And she's like, that's in Nigeria. And I didn't realize until I saw her in person that she's like asking Siri where it is, you know, and then responding to me over text, you know, and she's like, you know, the idea that, she, you know, that my kids are so tied into this information and so, you know, cleanly pick it up. It's kind of amazing and scary probably both at the same time. But I think that they're having a lot of fun with it anyway.
The super smart thing with messages is that they made the stickers collaborative. So a friend of mine sent me a couple of Porsches side by side with a joke like my parking lot, LOL. And then I stuck a moose in front of it saying my parking lot. And then he stuck a person diving in to try to save the moose. And you're going back and forth and you're building these things. And because it's not text, it really is like it's images. And there's this wonderful sticker pack by Phil Ryu and David Lanham, you know, from Impact and Icon Factory that just lets you like add mustaches and googly eyes and heads. And you can, someone sends you a photo, you could add googly eyes and a mustache and send it back. And that makes it so much more engaging than just a picture.
Did you see the grammar correction?
Oh, I both love and hate it so much.
Someone has, yeah, exactly. There's the grammar correction. And do not do that to me. I'm just telling anybody who talks to me, or like, I don't care. Just as long as you
know. No, it used to be pray thee, and then it was prithee, and now we don't even use it anymore. Language evolves. I'm with Joss Whedon on this.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's a boring person that can only spell something one way.
That spell is S-P-L-T. Spell, there we go. I think it's really true. So in that spirit, for a non-boring person, if you want to create an entire website where you can tell people how bad their grammar is, I think Leo might have the perfect service for you.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll have more with Mac Break Weekly in just a bit, but first a word from Squarespace. As you know, the place to make a beautiful website, a portfolio, an online store, or a personal blog. That's where my personal blog is. It's so easy to make a great slideshow. It's at leolaporte.com with pictures and stuff. And then I said, oh, well, I should add my blog. I imported my blog. I've been doing a blog for almost 20 years. It imported all of the previous posts. That was nice. Made it very easy for me to set it up. I don't have an online store, but every Squarespace template does have commerce capabilities. So if I should decide I want to sell candles or something, I could. I use it for my photos, a photo portfolio. It's just great. If you really want to get geeky, Squarespace has the best developer platform out there. This, I think a lot of people don't know this because Squarespace is famous. Of course, it's the best hosting and the best software that are married together to give you a site that never goes down, that looks fantastic, that's got all the best engineering, mobile responsive design, e-commerce, all that stuff. I think you know that, but perhaps you don't know that if you're a developer, if you are a CSS or JavaScript guru and you want a full access and full control, you can get it with a Squarespace developer platform. It is great. You could start with a blank template that has all of the, you know, the under the hoods capabilities in there, so you can kind of get a really quick start. Or you could take an existing template or create your own. You'll have full control over the site's HTML, CSS, JavaScript. You've got a JSON API. You've got a content management system. It really is super slick. And once you've registered as a developer and you flip the toggle, you can use SFTP to get yourself to the site. You can use Git. They support Git. So you can have check-in, check-out, all that stuff. Git coding. It is just fantastic. The good news for non-coders is that means there's a very rich ecosystem of developers who will, for a very reasonable price, and I know because we used one for Lisa's new site, artisanalagency.com, do it all for you, do all the work for you. Awesome. I want you to take a look. You can get a free trial right now, squarespace.com. All I ask, if you decide to buy, use the offer code MACBREAK. You'll get 10% off, and of course, we'll get credit, and that's nice. Squarespace, the place to make your next website. Don't forget the offer code MACBREAK to get 10% off. Thank you, Squarespace. And now back to MacBreak Weekly.
Thank you, Leo. So it wasn't all launches and new products for Apple. They also took a hit when it came to diversity. And this is a really complicated story because it's got multi facets. A publication called Mike was investigating, you know, the the keynote that Apple did, the iPhone keynote, saying that women weren't given a lot of stage time, that it was mostly Tim Cook, Phil Schiller, and Jeff Williams who were up on stage. And some of the women who were there, or some of the diversity that was there, didn't come from Apple, but came from third parties. And then they got this letter back, which they said came from Apple PR. They blanked out the name, but they published the letter, even though the letter said, this is on background. They said, we had not agreed to background, so we're publishing this. And that led to a lot more discussion about diversity and some of the problems that women have been facing, or at least women that they've been talking to have been facing within Apple and Apple's human resources department. So let's break this down. Andy, my thing is, if Apple had been founded 10 years ago, or if they had had huge problems and had to turn over leadership the way a company like Microsoft has, I think the leadership structure itself would be much more diverse now, just because the climate, the times, the talent in Silicon Valley is much more diverse. But Apple's executives have been there in most cases for years, and they have expanded. There's Angela Ahrens now, and there's many, many other people there, but it's still a very, very small group. And they tend to let those people do the stage demos. And I'm not sure changing that would benefit them. I mean, in the old days, it would just be one half Siri and Steve Jobs doing the entire demo.
Yeah, but that was a while ago. And there are a couple of different aspects to this. One of them is that, you should have as diverse a cast of characters in your public keynotes as possible. This isn't just PR. This isn't just putting on a good face. It really is choosing how you choose to – this is how you choose to represent yourself to the rest of the world. And part of that is we want to represent ourselves as not just a bunch of white guys. Speaking as a white guy, I don't think being a white guy is a terrible thing, but you really do have, once your company reaches a certain scale, I think you have a certain responsibility to make every single person that's in your organization feel as though that they are personally the face of your organization. So when time after time after time after time, Apple events are all white guys on stage, it's not emphatically telling everybody who is not a white guy that you are not necessarily what we choose to represent. But goodness, if you've got a backpack full of troubles, that's one more brick that the company is putting into your backpack for you that it doesn't have to, because the range of talent and backgrounds inside of Apple is amazing. And if it means that we have fewer of the regular cast of characters, if it means that Craig Federighi doesn't have as much stage time, if it means that Phil doesn't have as much stage time, that's what you got to do. It's such an easy thing. And also there's the altruistic part of there are people that are struggling under burdens that are being imposed upon them completely unfairly and ridiculously. And if you can just tell these people that are trying to make their way, many of them trying to start their careers in technology, that yes, when Google has an event, I see lots of women there. I see lots of people that look like me up on that stage, it is an endorsement from the entire industry that you are welcome in this place. I mean, it's hard to overstate the amount of crap that, for instance, women are forced to take in this industry. When I have lunch or coffee with female friends of mine who work for these large companies, and I ask them, so how are things going? 10% of me is like stealing for terrible stories that are unbelievable, which is not to say I don't believe them, but I'm like, I can't believe that someone would talk to you that way. I can't believe someone would treat you that way. I can't believe that someone, at the very least, if they're not willing to treat every one of their coworkers with the same amount of dignity and respect, I'm at least shocked that they're not so stupid, that they're so stupid that their simple desire for self-protection is like, I acknowledge that saying this to this coworker would be a bad, stupid thing for me to do. It would be a career-limiting prospect. So anything that Apple can do, they should be doing. And I acknowledge that it's difficult when you have a team leadership that is as compact as what you have at Apple, and when you really are, it's a hereditary, almost a heraldic sort of position to be in that troika of leadership. It's hard to promote a woman or a non-white guy into one of those positions. But I think they should work on that. But again, there's no reason not to have more women on that stage. Just no, there's no reason, no excuse for them not to have more people of color up on that stage. So I'm very, very glad that this has come out. I'm very, very glad this has gotten the level of attention that it has, because it's not as though Apple is unique in having a problem with making every woman feel as though they are as important part of this machine as any other part of that machine, making them feel as though if they start at Apple, they could go as far as their talents and their motivation and their destiny will take them. It's something that really has to be corrected, and it has to be corrected by every single company saying this is important to us, and it's so important to us that they're willing to do this. I don't want to ping Phil for something that he's been dinged on way too much in the past couple weeks, but that's courage. That's real courage, saying that we are going to make ourselves a little bit vulnerable here. We will admit that we've had problems. We will show you what we're doing to try to heal these problems, because there's very little they can do that would be as important as a corporate citizen as to be the company that says that we are going to we have an important position to be filled. We are not going to fill it until we fill it with an important woman, an important person of color, because we know that those people are out there. We're just not looking hard enough to find them. We are not just going to go with, we know this person. This person's worked well with us. This person comes highly recommended. We're going to say that there is someone as good as that that is not in the radar, that it's not on the radar system we've been using that has only been finding white guys for us so far. We're going to change our radar system so that we're finding someone else. So end of rant, but I would not be ranting about it so deeply had I not been so taken aback by the stories that I've been told by, again, friends of mine that should be treated better but aren't.
I think it's absolutely...
As a Steeler fan, I think that one of the things that I believe actually the Steelers pushed for was, you know, a priority in interviewing, black coaching positions. And Mike Tomlin, of course, is the coach now for the Steelers. And I'll argue he's probably one of the best coaches that Steelers ever had. I mean, they only had like three in the last 30 years or whatever. But I think that you're seeing a lot more of those coaches. Of coaches that are African American, that makes a lot of sense when you look at how many players are African American to have that representation. And what it took was saying this is going to be a priority. Going to be a priority. We think it's important. You need to interview and really take a look at that. And then you just started seeing it pop up. You know, it takes time, but I think that you're right, that it's just a matter of saying that we're going to make sure that we interview those folks first, or at least give them a shot because of any area. And I think that it's made a big difference.
And it's an incredibly important subject, and some people believe that Apple gets unduly criticized for this, but Apple gets a lot of attention for everything, and this is the equal and opposite part of that, is when they absolutely deserve a more intense level of scrutiny because they get a more intense level of promotion when they do something good. So, you know, you're the biggest company in the world, you get the biggest magnifying glass on you, and it's up to you how that magnifying glass reflects you. And I think there's a lot of good stuff in this. I mean, pain promotes change. And the more painful this is, whether Apple goes first or Apple, you know, does it slowly and fightingly, the pain makes change go faster. And I think that the discussion itself is hugely valuable. I do think it's really hard with the leadership because, again, they've been there for years. It's a very old company. You don't want to just fire Phil Schiller and bring somebody in. But the board, for example, boards get turned over all the time. One statement Apple could make is, I don't know exactly what the law is on it, but like next week, the Apple could decide we want a board that reflects our customer base and reflects the diversity that we want to champion. And that entire board could turn over and really show an Apple that isn't fitting with what they put up on the website and in the ads. And I think there's things like the Safari team at Apple. Famously, they decided the only way to get more women and more diversity was to include more women and more diversity in the process. That if you didn't send women and people of all backgrounds to the universities for the job fairs, people wouldn't come up for them. They would just feel excluded immediately. They wouldn't even approach you. So they started sending women. They started sending people different backgrounds, and they would get more CVs, and they'd include them in the hiring process because they wouldn't automatically rule out a candidate just because of their background. And it led to an incredibly deep, diverse talent pool at Safari. And those sort of programs can just get propagated everywhere. I think a couple of weeks ago or a month ago, they did a comparison of everyone's salaries, and they made an effort to adjust to make sure that there was no disparity just based on your gender or your background, and they adjusted a lot of salaries there. But unless HR is involved, unless people don't get the kind of stories that Andy's heard and that I've heard, then I'm sure a lot of people have heard. It's not a matter of whether you get paid the same. It's whether you have the opportunity to advance the same and whether you actually love and enjoy being there, not just because it's Apple, but because it's a phenomenal place to work. And I think that is going to take, you know, Tim Cook down deep, deep scrutiny, almost laser ablation across the company. But I think, you know, Apple's one of those places where if they have the will, it's absolutely a solvable problem, not just for them, but it can help the industry.
This is a company that introduced a $12,000 gadget watch. This is a company that removed the headphone jack from a phone that is known for playing music and movies. It underscores the fact that there is nothing that you can't do if you decide that it's important for you that this thing happen. So whenever I see a situation like this, a situation in which there is consistently not a visible presence of women and people of color at the highest level, it's partly because they do not believe that this is a problem that they need to address. And it's going to have to take stuff like saying, just like with the Steelers, that we are going to make it a priority to fill this position to restore balance to the power of the force. And of course, it's not just Apple, it's not just technology. I was chagrined by a report from the White House about how women in the positions of authority at the White House are basically have strategized how to make sure that they are given the proper amount of their ideas are given the same amount of power and respect as ideas from the men in the room, where they basically have a policy and they've sort of teamed together that if Cheryl says something, posits an idea, the other four women in the room will immediately congratulate and improve upon that idea and underscore every time they mention it, say, well, I think that the thing with Cheryl's idea is that this, and well, Cheryl's idea isn't going to work for this, but we can improve it by doing that. So number one, filling the room with endorsement as opposed to I'm going to shoot this down, just shoot this down. But also every time that idea is repeated, the word Cheryl is included there to make it real clear that this was not someone else's, one of the men in the room's ideas. This was Cheryl's idea, and she's the person that solved this problem for everybody. So it's an American problem. It's not just a technology problem or an Apple problem.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, because some people will look at this and they'll go, I don't understand. The most qualified person has a job. We're going to be giving opportunity to people who don't. But that's not it at all. No. There are people who simply don't have the opportunity to compete. They can't even get in the door. They can't even get into the system to get into the door. And that needs to be fixed. Everyone has to have the same opportunity to get to those same levels and to be in those same levels. And I was having this conversation with a couple of friends of mine, and one of them happened to be Chinese. One of them happened to be Italian. And they kept saying they don't understand. And I said, well, how do you feel when you see like a kung fu stereotype? And he was outraged. And how do you feel when you see a mob stereotype? And that person was outraged too. How do they do that? And it was totally not realistic. It besmirches our entire people. And you have to like take that feeling of when you have felt excluded or made fun of or treated less than, and project it to everybody else. And then I think you start to understand what a lot of people go through on a daily basis. And you understand that it's totally unacceptable, not because they're a certain gender or a certain background or something, but it's just as a person, it's totally unacceptable. And each and every one of us has to do everything we can to fix it.
Yeah. And to your
now,
point,
now I will
to your
say, comment, I will say that on the one side of the other side of that is that, you know, I grew up in a childhood where, when we were being, you know, inappropriate or whatever, my mom, you know, and I say like, we wouldn't clean our room or we wouldn't do whatever, or we said something crazy. My mom mostly just followed it with laughter and ridicule. You know, that was pretty much like that was her primary way of disciplining us, and it does create a certain, I would say, for parents. I mean, I definitely believe that my kids, I mean, I definitely worry about this stuff, and people should definitely have all this stuff, but I definitely have taken to my mother's approach of developing kids with thick skins that allow them to manage life, because regardless of how much these companies work at it, you will be more successful if you have a thicker skin.
Yeah, but that's true and practical. The difficulty is that, again, women and people of color, people who look like me have been telling them stuff like that since their grandparents have been trying to get ahead. And so they no one should have to have as thick a skin that's as necessary to deal with.
And I'm not saying, I think there's a lot of
things. I know you're not. But
my wife is African American. So speaking from that perspective, I definitely understand the sensitivity to it. But I think that it's also important to, you know, from a company's perspective, we spend a lot of time paying attention to it. And I think a lot of companies have to pay attention to those things. But I think that also people need to also, you know, push, you know, like not with big things, but with little things. There were some of the, in the articles that were talking about some of the issues that were happening at Apple. Like I there was definitely some of them I looked at and said, okay, that's not okay. And then there were a couple of them I was like, being a little sensitive there. You know what I'm saying? Like, not quite, you know, like where I can definitely see how I would report that. And if I heard that happening in my company, someone would definitely get an earful. But I don't know if I personally would ever bring it up if I was on the other side, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking about, I'm going to paste, if you do a Google search for Chief of Army Lieutenant General David Morrison on YouTube, you find exactly how the head of an organization needs to act about abuse and unacceptable behavior like that. It is the most applause-inducing video you've seen, where he's the Chief of Army in the Australian Army. And there were, according to the comments, I remembered it, but I just refreshing myself because it was a few years ago. There was a news reports about unacceptable behavior by army members towards, again, the non-male, non-white people in the army. And so it is a 3-minute video of this man in regular office work, battle fatigues, staring into the camera and just saying pointedly, "This is our army. We do not tolerate this. If you want to be disrespectful to other members of your army, you are not wanted here. Get out. You might find another organization that will tolerate it, but I don't think you will." And I'm not saying that Tim Cook should get on battle fatigues and do a YouTube video about it, but I actually
think he should. I think that would be
awesome. But it would be. I think that it's such a great opportunity for Apple to say unequivocally, "This is how we feel." For someone to see internally, Tim Cook saying, "This is how seriously that I'm taking this issue," that by the you want this problem to be solved before it comes up to me in my office and I have to fix it, because that will wind up with asses being bounced out of here. And you don't want that to happen, basically me imposing a whole bunch of rules from the top down, as opposed to people who are supposed to be responsible for protecting the members of their team being. I'm just saying that you would like to have every manager individually responsible for saying that's not appropriate. We're not going to tolerate this. And please realize that I'm now going to be watching you really closely to see if you can learn a lesson. Because if you can't, we don't need you. We don't want you. We will find a way to get you out of here. By the time you get to a problem where you have to have Tim Cook being the God voice from on high saying, "Yeah, here is what we define, what all humans define as proper levels of respect for other humans." It's like saying, "I'm going to explain to you how to shower after every morning. I'm going to show you how to make sure you apply deodorant and you don't smell like a goat coming to the office every morning. You should have learned this stuff before your interview with Apple. It shocks me that I have to explain this stuff to you."
And Tim Cook has the moral authority. He's built up the moral authority to totally own that sort of a statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's made that statement before to his great credit, not just within his own house, but also to try to extend that to I'm the CEO of the biggest company in the world. I'm gay and the reason why I'm making this an official statement is because I want to set the example and make people know that, look, if you think that I am less than the same as you, you are basically saying that you are not capable of being the CEO of the greatest and the biggest company, tech company in the world. So I would love it's a great opportunity for leadership. And I hope that Apple responds thoughtfully to this.
And I think that the easiest way to handle this in a lot of ways is to hire more minorities and more women. I mean, I think that, you know, my company is very diverse. Everything from, you know, their choices, their ethnic backgrounds, everything else. It has been plus and minus a very, very diverse, and that creates the sensitivity. You know, like, you know, I think that, you know, it does. I mean, definitely telling people that this is not right is very important. But I think also the hiring is the first step. You know, I think that Apple and Google and a lot of other folks are all focused on that as well.
Yep. So there's absolutely no way to properly transition such a serious topic to such a goofy one. So I'm just gonna put a lantern on it and talk about the new Apple ad, because Apple has now got an Apple Music ad up where the executives actually appear in the commercial. I don't know how often they've done this. I don't think it's very often, but we have one with Boz, with Eddie Q, with Jimmy Iovine, all about new Apple Music. And yes, it's funny and it harkens back to Carpool Karaoke, and it's got James Corden in it. But Andy, this, I don't know if they managed to pull it off. I mean, Corden was funny, but I don't know if everyone else managed to pull it off.
Yeah, that's kind of tough. I won't make fun of them for it because I'm sure they were doing their best. Yeah, I mean it's okay. It's nice, but it didn't make me more interested in Apple Music than I was before, and that's the only purpose of having a video like that. I think that they've been using James Corden a lot. Yeah, see.
Oh, can you play a little bit of that, Carson?
Yeah, exactly. So they got him in drag. They've got him in different. Yeah, they got him in a Pharrell hat. It's cool. But maybe not Pharrell. Comedy is just super, super hard. And also, it's a lot of inside baseball where those of us are saying, oh my God, look, it's Eddie Q. Isn't that funny? Like, and everyone else is like, oh, so there's a guy. I see. Nice shirt. Very nice shirt. Nice office.
There's a comedian and three non-actors in this commercial, and I guess they're playing. I don't know. What do you think, Alex?
I don't believe in putting non-actors in commercials unless they're just testimonials. I think that puts people in a really complicated. I mean, then people talking about how something is good for them or whatever in a serious thing, but I think that trying to push someone who hasn't done that before is something that takes years of experience and process to get to be a little bit bigger than life and to be comfortable with that process. And so I probably would not have gone down that path.
Looping back around, the iPhones are out. People are already talking about the next iPhones. There was a story in VentureBeat about proof that Apple is working with Energous, I don't know how to pronounce it, to wirelessly charge phones up to 15 feet away. I always think that I can hold a marshmallow in between me and the phone and it'll nicely toast. I know that's just wacky, too much Warner Brothers cartoon stuff, but this technology is one of those dream things that we've always hoped for, because no matter what contact charging is like, it's next to your bed. I've knocked my Apple Watch off the charger several times just by moving my pillow or my comforter, and I've had my Palm Pre was sent across the room just because it wasn't well connected to the charger. We don't have the ubiquitous charging yet. This sounds like the future, Andy, but I don't know if it's next year's future the way people are talking about it.
Yeah, I've always thought that Apple's explanation for why they don't do Qi wireless charging is that, well, we are giving you a battery that lasts like 2 or 3 days on occasion. That's how we're basically making it so that you don't need to charge it unless you've actually put it on your nightstand at home. I don't know how we can make it more easy for you. Also, this technology, it has to really, really work. Which means that I put it behind a metal box, or I left it in my pocket and didn't charge overnight. That's not going to make it work. You also change the problem from I have to have my phone on that special pad at my desk to I have to make sure my phone is in the room that has the charger in it. Mm-hmm. I'll admit that I've had times where I'm like, okay, the end of the charging cord was less than 6 inches away from the phone. I feel as though I should get at least partial charge and partial credit for that. So that would work for me. I mean, and also we've seen Apple delete the headphone jack, which is going to really, really inconvenience a lot of people for a couple of years to save a little space. I don't know what it would take for them to put in whatever technology and whatever antennas are required to make
coils,
this work.
I think.
And say nothing above creating interference between all the radios. So much of the engineering of any phone comes between, we have all these different radios and all these different high-powered electronics, all of which they're creating fields of their own. How are we going to make sure that none of these crammed together electronics are interfering with each other? So I don't know if they would do it. The source of the rumor is that they had to do it. The company had to do a disclosure about because it's a radio device, how they've done their testing. And they listed, well, it's at these following labs for these following certification testing. And Apple has been listed as one of those labs. Again, relating to, absolute proof that Apple must be including it in the next thing.
Apple tests everything.
Exactly. That's if we have a T-shirt, one of the first ones we're going to say, Apple tests everything. Don't panic. I'm sure we'd sell out of the first run of them. So I don't think much of this rumor.
I love it. I mean, even some of the iPhone reviews this year were full of it. And I the inner Tony Stark in me loves the idea of a white ceramic iPhone with an edge-to-edge display, a completely abstracted home button that can read fingerprints on every surface of it, that does wireless distance charging, because once you go ceramic, there's no metal interference anymore, which is why Apple didn't do wireless charging for years, and basically floats into your hand every morning. But the other part is technology is hard, and we've seen how hard it is for companies like Apple and Intel, who have been iterating year after year after year, to keep up the pace of that iteration. Because it's like, if you're in a Ferrari, you can get from 0 to 100 really fast, and you can push it and go from 0 to 200, okay, but going from 200 to 300, sometimes you got to bend the laws of physics. And that's where I think we're going with smartphones now, whether it's Apple or Samsung or anyone. Yes, we'll still have the innovations, but they're going to have to work really, really hard to keep up the sort of pace that we've come to expect from them.
And I don't think power is necessarily one of those. I mean, I would love to have a lightning connector for my watch.
It's just buried under a seal.
That cute little thing that I pop my Apple Watch onto to charge, and if I probably once a day it gets bumped, and then it gets knocked off my watch, and then it doesn't charge anything. So I can't even get that to work well on a daily basis, let alone I just want something that plugs in and calls it. I know I'm a little bit of curmudgeon, old fashioned Luddite. But I don't think this is probably something we'll see anytime soon.
I mean, years ago, you could make a waterproof phone if you didn't care about the toxicity of the chemicals, but Apple wants EPA ratings. And you could make a wireless charging phone if you didn't want to use metal backs, but Apple wanted to use metal backs. And you could there is now technology to charge through metal, but it's not efficient. And distance charging is not efficient. And Apple, every conference now, they're talking about their energy efficiency, not just how much power it has, but how efficient that power is. And I'm sure in the deep vaults of Cupertino, there is an iPhone 7S or 8 or X or whatever they're going to call the next one. That is everything that you would expect, Iron Man to have in his phone. I just don't know if that's the one that's going to ship hundreds of millions of units and when it's going to ship those things. Mm. I don't know. Future is hard. Leo, this is going to be the perfect time for you to tell me about how I could get all that science fiction stuff, not in reality, but, maybe in beautiful Audible form.
We'll have more with Mac Break Weekly in just a moment, but let me talk about Audible.com. I know these guys are all going to want to chime in. They're all Audible listeners. I'm an Audible listener. I just was looking. I've been an Audible listener since 2000. And the nice thing is I have one of these big Drobo drives, and I have a lot of storage space now, like 18 terabytes or something. I thought, I'm going to download all my Audible books. Let's see if I can get all my old Audible books so I'll have them for my trip. Not that I'm going to listen to 500 different books, but it's nice to have a bookshelf with you, all on your phone, right? So I have virtually every book. I think one book or two books the publishers have removed them from audio or whatever, but it's really nice because it really becomes your audio library. Almost 500 books I've listened to over the last 16 years as an Audible customer. You're not an Audible customer? Oh, you got to join. Actually, a couple of the books that we've been talking about lately are coming out. The third in the trilogy that we were talking about before, The Three Body Problem and Dark Forest, the third one is coming out September 20th. So will that be out today? It comes out today. So that's Death's End, Remembrance of Earth's Past. That's the first time we've known the title of the trilogy, by the way. I think they held it back so you wouldn't get like, what? Earth's what? Anyway, that comes out September 20th on Audible. I'm giving you can get two books. So here's a couple. Actually, if you shouldn't start with Death's End. You should start with The Three Body Problem if you haven't read it yet. And then we were talking about that wonderful Fallers sequence by Peter F. Hamilton. The second book in the series is a two-book series, A Night Without Stars. It's the second in the Chronicle of the Fallers. What do you call it? It's not a trilogy. It's a duology? Duo pair. The second in the pair of books. And that comes out on the 27th, next week, next Tuesday. So, look, I'm just giving you some ideas here. There's so many great books on Audible. I bring, when I travel, nonfiction about the regions I'm traveling to. I bring fiction to, you know, entertain, nonfiction to learn. I like to alternate. I love Audible. You will, too. So we've set it up that you get a book for free if you go to audible.com/MacBreak. That's going to be the gold account. That's the book of the month. A credit a month. Most books, 99.5% are one credit. And you get the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. So you get, you know, news updates as well. Audible has so many great books and college courses and comedy performances and radio shows. Just a wealth of audio entertainment. You will love audible.com/MacBreak. Your first one's free. Enjoy it today. Now we get back to MacBreak Weekly, already in progress.
Thank you, Leo. Whatever remote location you're broadcasting from, you've managed to set it up identically to the studio. It's brilliant, brilliant work. So I forgot to warn everybody that we would be having picks of the week coming up next. Andy, do you by any chance have yours ready?
I indeed have mine ready. It's a really good keyboard that Logitech just released. It's going to be a little familiar to a lot of people. This is the brand new Logitech K780 keyboard. It is a full 100 keyboard. It has something you've seen before in Logitech keyboards, where it's a Bluetooth keyboard. It can switch. It can pair to three different devices simultaneously. You can just switch between them. So for instance, right now I've got this talking to my podcasting Mac. I've got it talking to my iPad, and I've got it talking to my Android phone. And such simple things make things great. This is designed to be a desktop keyboard. It is wireless, of course, but it has, as you can see, this completely nice little shelf lip, so that you can, if you're using your iPad, for instance. This is going to drop completely, but it has enough room to have like a full-sized iPad plus your phone, or like a smaller iPad plus your phone plus another device, and it all can like be sitting right in front of your machine. And if you think that's a silly thing to do, you've never had a situation where you're getting a text message from somebody who's not using a desktop Studly chat app. And the ability to simply tap a button on the keyboard and suddenly be typing on the phone screen next to you is just absolutely beautiful. And also, it goes the extra mile. A lot of people are kind of upset with Bluetooth because of interference and all the things that Apple said were problems when they announced the reason for deleting the headphone jack and creating their own solution. But it also includes their own proprietary, Logitech's own proprietary system for connecting to your desktop. And as a matter of fact, there's a little cubby here that stores the special little USB dongle that will let this thing connect and act like a regular USB keyboard without having to configure, without having to do any pairing whatsoever. And of course, it runs on regular AAA batteries so that you can revel in the fact that you're helping to poison the planet no less than any other large paper mill in your financial district. So I'm really happy with it. I think the list price is about $100. I've seen it discounted for about $10. Just got released last week, and this is probably they sent it to me for review last week, and I've already sort of realized that maybe I'm just going to have to send them $100 and buy one of my own. I was actually on the sofa the day it came. I often use my iPad just as my sofa computer for just keeping up with email or just bopping around the net while I'm watching TV. And it was such a nice thing to have in my lap with my phone next to it, because I'm also getting texts and other messages from people, especially since I'm both Android and iOS. And I really, really fell in love with it. It's a simple idea, but so well executed.
Is it available in the US?
Yep, it started shipping just last week.
Okay, can't find it on.
Andy always costs me money.
I have to get one, and then I can't find it on Amazon. And then all I could find is on the UK Amazon, and then all I could find it was Euros, and couldn't find it on the US.
No, it is the misery. Alex, what about you? What have you got for us this week?
Yeah, I don't have it with me, but what I have just gotten that I started to experiment with that I like a lot, that kind of takes a lot of pressure out, is these. It is a nifty mini drive. Have you seen these? So these
Yes.
this slides right into your your SD slot. And with a micro SD, you can now add hard drive space, which is something that I'm very attached to. A lot of times what I'm starting to use this for, what I begin to play with it over the last week, is really the idea of taking files that, presentation files and files that I use all the time and everything else that right now are sitting on my hard drive, and some of them are pretty big. It's like all these images that I use for my presentations and all these little movies that I use, stuff that I have backed up somewhere else. I'm still experimenting with this, but things that I don't necessarily want to take up 100 or 150 megs or gigs of space on my drive. So I've been experimenting with it, and it's working really well. Not quite as fast as the internal drive, but plenty fast to keep a lot of those kind of basics and clear off some valuable space on my laptop.
I'm buying two things this week. This is the worst and the best. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. So my recommendation is the new Apple Smart battery case. I usually use an iPhone Plus, but because the iPhone has a better camera on the regular sized one now, I've been using it. The battery life is good. It's an extra 2 hours over last year's, but it's not the same as a Plus. So I've been using this to sort of top off at the end of the day, especially when we've been out shooting a lot of photos, taking a lot of video, maybe catching a lot of Pokemon. I don't know. I don't want to dwell on the details. But the nice thing about this, I was a huge fan of the original. I know some people really despise the hump, but this is one of those rare occasions where I think Apple, they didn't go for form over function. They went for pure function. And there's several things that are great about it. The first is that because the hump is incredibly constricted, it doesn't get in the way of the antennas. And that means that the radio signal can go through. And it's even got built-in antennas so that there is almost no loss. And the problem with a lot of battery cases that I've found is that they're so hard to get the radio signal out that the radio ends up amping up. The phone gets hot and you waste a lot of the power that the battery case is supposed to be giving you back. So this is way more efficient. On top of that, because it's an Apple product, they have deep integration with iOS. So iOS knows it's not plugged into the wall. It knows it's plugged into a battery still. So it doesn't switch into full, plugged into a lightning cable mode, which reduces a lot of restrictions. It lets things like networking start happening, updates start happening, and that can also chew through a lot of power. So in this, it stays in low power battery mode while it's connected to this case. And as a result of that, I get really, really, really good battery life. So good that it doesn't bother me at all that what it might look like. And actually, it feels really good when you hold it because that hump goes right into your hand. And it gives me the best of both worlds. I have a teeny tiny skinny phone that fits nicely into even my non-hipster jeans during the day. And then if I need it towards the end of the day, I just slip on this case and it's a powerhouse. It lasts me well into the next day. So it's available in black this year, a big surprise because Apple went with matte black and glossy black, jet black, sorry, for their phone finishes. So that's the new color. No variety of colors. So you can't get a rose gold or a gold or a silver. And that'll lead some people to getting matching cases. Totally understand. But if you want a really slim, really high performance case that you only put on when you really need it, I can't recommend this case enough. It is just super, super smart, as the name implies, and works really, really good with, if I hold it right side up, works really, really good with your new iPhone really well. I need that grammar sticker pack thing.
I want to make one quick correction. The K780 is actually $80, not $100, and it's not on Amazon yet, but you can order it directly from Logitech.com right now.
Woohoo! I can order it because my phone is still alive and I have extra storage, thanks to Alex. This turned out to be an awesome day.
Nicely done. Right. Nicely done. What a pro.
So that's it for Mac Break Weekly. We survived this, the Leo-less day. We managed to make it through. Andy, Alex, thank you so much for smoothing over all the gaffes that I made and not pointing them out and ridiculing me in public the way someone's parents might.
I'm not your mom.
Oh, you're muted, Alex. We almost made it.
I was muted. At the ungodly hour of 8 a.m. In Pacific Standard Time, we're going to stream 360 with Elemental and Nokia. That's what I'm sitting outside of. We're putting together a 360 camera and the trucks downstairs. And anyway, if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see that there's a link to where to sign up if you want to actually come to here. We've got a couple seats left. I'll also tomorrow post the link to the actual stream. You will be able to watch it on your desktop by just moving your little mouse around. So if you want to check out a 360 live stream, check it out tomorrow, 8 a.m. Pacific Standard. And I'll tweet it about a half an hour before.
So, and the Twitter is Alex Lindsay, right, on Twitter?
Alex Lindsay, all one word.
And that's the best place to find all your internet stuff, Pixel Core, whatever secret missions you're on.
I don't really talk about the secret missions, but yeah, yeah, I oftentimes will post hints of things on Twitter, and Twitter is usually the easiest one. Twitter or Facebook, you can follow me also on Facebook. I post more images, I think, probably on Facebook than I do on Twitter.
I have to admit, I love it when people try to figure out if the picture of Earth you're posting is from a space station, lunar orbit, or Mars. You know, they're just trying to work out the science.
Exactly.
Andy Anako, you are at the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. You are at the Chicago Sun-Times. You are on numerous podcasts, including Material. Do you still do Anako's Almanac?
Yes, there's a big announcement coming for the Anako Almanac on 5x5, so stay tuned for that. But thank you very much for calling out.
And you can find Andy on Twitter at Anako. You just got to figure out how to spell it, and then you're good to go.
Exactly. The price of admission is to spell my last name. Then you can get me up my Instagram, my Twitter, my website, everything.
And what else do you have coming up, Andy? Anything you want to tease?
Yep. Now that I've actually seen the how Apple has rolled out the lack of headphone, there is a piece in the Sun-Times about the headphone jack. And also, I'm going to be taking a look sequentially at a whole bunch of different Apple products all over again that I haven't written about in the past year. Sometimes you write about the iPad and then you don't write about here's what it's been like for a year with the iPad. So I'm kind of starting a series with that. So stay tuned for that stuff, too.
And I'm sure there's so many great new camera phones out there. Where do you post the stuff? Where's the best place? Flickr?
Flickr and Instagram. I just had one of those terrible Photokina, the international trade show for camera stuff is going on this week. And so I've just gotten the press release for the updated version of my Olympus camera with a brand new lens. And I'm like, okay, do I buy? I know that I'm not going to have the self-control not to buy both of these, but am I going to be spending $3,000 next month when it comes out, or in February when I will have lots of spare cash to spend on silly things that make me happy? So yeah, when I get my hands on the iPhone, you will see a flood of stuff on Instagram and on flickr.com, and you're also going to see, once I get that camera, essentially me going into a cave and just stroking it like like Gollum stroking the ring, but without even putting a battery in it.
Precious 4K 4K video, uncompressed HDMI, 2 SD ports, 20 megapixels, 60 frames per second in still mode.
Anyway, Tixie, Faust, beautiful.
Why can't I have it now?
And Leo, like we said, Leo's on special assignment, but he did talk about his new iPhone 7 on This Week in Tech past episode. So you can go take a quick look at that if you want to see Leo's initial impressions. And you can follow him on the social networks, because my feeling is, no matter what remote part of the world he ends up in, no matter how secret his assignment is, he'll be all over Twitter and Instagram and, you know, any place that he can find that has even a remote radio connection. But as for now, thank you all so much for joining us. You are an amazing community. We love being with you every week. If you didn't watch the show live, live is the best way to watch the show, but you can find it at any time, the video version on YouTube. You can go to iTunes, get the audio versions. And then those words that I hate saying, break time is over. Don't make me say it. I want to say it. Break time is over.
You want to be the nice boss that brings cupcakes and lets you have your bring
take
your
the
dog
rest of the day
work.
Off. Break time isn't over. Just take the week. Get some cupcakes.
Even if you'd rather be actually making progress on your work, so you don't have to work late tomorrow night. Everybody stop working. I rented a pirate bouncy house. Aren't I the best boss ever?
We've been bought out. We got Google money now. We're rich. And they just throw all the furniture over.